Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. My name is Jason Lewis, and I'm your host for the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Thank you for joining us today for the show that is shaping the way that the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. First, I want to thank our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by OneCause, leader in online, mobile, and virtual fundraising software. OneCause supports over 6,000 nonprofits to reach more and raise more with innovative solutions. You can visit their virtual fundraising resource center at www.onecause.com. I also want to tell you about what's coming up in July. Our team at Responsive want to invite you to participate in 6 hours of online CFRE-approved training. I am talking about a soup-to-nuts fundraising philosophy that will ensure your organization is ready for the road ahead. No one on the planet is going to offer you tools as researched, as tested, and as sustainable as our four frameworks. If you'd like more information about partnering with OneCause, or more information about our upcoming webinar series, look for information in the show notes. After you do, shoot me an email and let me know that you did. Now let's introduce today's guest. Risa, would you mind introducing yourself and telling us about the project that you're doing?
Of course. Hi, everyone. My name is Risa. I am a senior business administration major at York College, as Professor Lewis mentioned. For this project, we're really hoping to get insight about women all over the world, their work in the nonprofit sector, and get that insight of what it's like out in the world and what kind of challenges they face and how they operate. So I think it'll be very interesting.
Yeah, Risa. So tell us, before we introduce Miriam, why don't you tell us a little bit about the interviews that you've done thus far?
Yeah, so the first two women that we've interviewed, it's been very interesting since they work in Syria, the first woman, and the second woman in Argentina. And they've worked directly in providing resources and basic necessities, things of that sort, to kind of help tailor to their region's priorities. So things like that, things that maybe aren't as prevalent in our country. They sure are in certain areas, but you know, it's definitely a major issue in regards to their well-being and their lifestyle. So it's been interesting in hearing their experiences and being able to provide for these both children, refugees, and all these people. And so having this variety of the nonprofit sector, as we're going to find in our next couple interviewees, I think is interesting to see how flexible and how wide-ranging the whole nonprofit sector is and the things that they help and provide.
Yeah, so Miriam and I did graduate school together. We were just figuring out the dates. We graduated from graduate school about 10 years ago. Miriam, would you mind introducing yourself?
Sure. Thank you so much. Hello, everyone. My name is Miriam Wagner-Long. I am currently living in Germany, and I'm the CEO and partner of a consultancy called Agentur Zielgenau, and we're located right outside of Frankfurt.
Yeah. And Miriam, you and I were in a graduate program at Eastern. We were just talking about how that it was a messy experience. But what would you say sort of one of the highlights of that experience was that we sort of all experienced together?
Well, aside from my 4.0 GPA, you mean? Sorry, I had to mention it. No, I'm just kidding. No, I think definitely the highlight was not only did the program run in DC, but I learned so much from all the other organizations and our colleagues in class. And it was a very hands-on program, so I wouldn't want to have missed it.
Yeah, yeah. It was a great experience. And I'm glad that you and I and everyone else, there was another dozen or so people that were involved, and even several of our professors I've continued to be in contact with, as I'm sure you have. So Riza, you have some questions. So I'm going to sort of take a back seat, and you're going to be our co-host today on the podcast, and you're going to really get Miriam talking. And so I'm going to let you take the lead from here. Sound good?
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. So Miriam, if you could start off and tell me more about yourself and your work in the consulting firm, how you kind of help these nonprofit organizations and the kind of advice and help you guys give them.
Mm-hmm. Sure. We are not your typical nonprofit consultancy agency. Mm-hmm. We actually, what we do is we consult, but we also seamlessly integrate into an organization. So we are oftentimes interim fundraisers, but also set up processes for nonprofit management to actually work. Because oftentimes we are approached by nonprofit organizations that have just started with their fundraising, or that are actually coming over from even some American nonprofit organizations that would like to explore the European fundraising market. And so we get them set up, and setting them up in fundraising means you have to be able to work in various departments of the organizations and be familiar with all the processes. So pretty much that's what we do. There are different types of organizations. There are organizations from ranging from development aid to education, all the way to health-related organizations. And in my private time, I volunteer on the board of the German Fundraising Association. So fundraising from morning to night.
No, awesome. Do you mind delving deeper into what those fundraising looks like? It's like the kind of programs you do, activities, things you set up for, that sort of thing?
Mm-hmm. It's not so much different than it is in the US. That's pretty much where I learned how to fundraise and what fundraising means to me today, and how to go about it. What we don't do here, as what my agency doesn't do, is I don't do face-to-face initiatives. There's mm-hmm. excellent agencies over here, and it is still one of the I would say most popular fundraising initiatives, aside from direct mailing appeals, in Germany. But we are more, we're actually working more with donors and setting up initiatives that are very close to the donors, that enhance your relationship building. And I think, as Jason sometimes says, not to keep them at arm's length, but actually inviting them to come into your organization. Yeah. So mm-hmm. That's the type of fundraising we conduct over here.
Mm, that's awesome. So I know you said you had learned majority of your fundraising through working in America. What are some kind of discrepancies or maybe cultural differences you've seen that have maybe resulted in maybe failures, or maybe have proven successes, or have you seen that relationship work between working cross-culturally?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, when I first moved back to Germany, that was in 2011, I shared with my family and friends that I am now going to work in fundraising over here. And most of them have never even heard the word fundraising before. Hmm. And has a lot to do with the way people give in Germany and our tax system. If I compare it to the US, and if I compare it to how my friends were brought up, it's instilled in the culture over there. Over here in Germany, we do pay higher taxes. Many of us even pay church tax. So your income, available income, is much less. And so you have to decide who you're going to give it to, or if you even give. And a lot of my family and friends have actually never really donated on a regular basis in the past. Mm-hmm. And I am now experiencing a lot of people approaching me and asking me, how can I donate to an organization, and what organization can I even donate to? So it's a different experience. And I think, yeah. When I first came here, I realized that it's just not as common as it is in the US. And that mm-hmm. made it a little bit challenging for me.
I bet. And so how did you find yourself aligning with fundraising? How did your interests kind of align in that way?
Well, and I think I mentioned to you in the introduction earlier, when I actually studied international management as well. And I worked for a company that produced sustainable containers that you can buy in supermarkets. I don't want to mention the name now, but I think you know what I'm getting to. Mm-hmm. And my goal was to figure out how many of these containers I can put into shelving systems and where it should be placed. So it will be, you know, point of sales. And I quickly started to realize that it's just not what drives me and it's just not my line of work. And I always liked to help people. I realized that I couldn't be a doctor myself, but I always wanted to help people. And I wanted to, you know, support causes that I really like. And I stumbled across that time I was living outside of Nashville with my husband, and I stumbled across a job description, and it combined my interest helping people yet applying my management and marketing know-how. And I ended up working for a consultancy in the U.S. and working for a nonprofit organization outside of Philadelphia. And it was just so inspiring working with people that are truly committed to a cause that I realized that's what I want to do the rest of my life.
Awesome. And so going back to your work at consulting, what are some main obstacles that's maybe prevent your success in helping these organizations grow in their fundraising?
Mm-hmm. I would say, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners will probably be able to relate. Effective leadership by far is one of the if that doesn't exist, it's a huge obstacle. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm looking at it right now from a fundraising perspective. And you're trying to acquire prospects, and you need to nurture relationships. You need to be authentic. You need to show that you're really and truly believe, in the mission, and you have to value the mission. And if you don't value the mission, it's going to be difficult for you to, attract others to, share your passion for a cause. And, above all, I think fundraising has to be within the culture of the organization, and it has to be taught and lived cross-sectionally. So it can't just be a standalone activity within an organization. And I do come across a lot of organizations where a CEO or the board tells people to just go about their day and do fundraising.
Yeah.
And that's just not how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that happens whether you are in Germany, whether you're in the UK or in the US. I do think that problem exists, that fundraising is just so much more than raising funds.
Mm-hmm, definitely. So in your experience in working with different organizations and fundraising efforts, have you ever worked with anyone who's kind of gone against your advice and your counseling? And how did you go about that?
Very good question. I actually did work, and I'm trying to think of a good example that I did work for an organization that accepted a donation that I would have personally and I consulted against accepting it because it was from an actress in the adult movie industry.
Oh.
And she raised funds for a really good cause. And it was out of the good of her heart. And except she made it public. And I consulted against accepting the donation because I know it would go into a whirlwind and with other donors.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, it didn't for the organization, but that's when they went against my advice.
That's definitely interesting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It was a bit crazy.
And then going back to the core of fundraising then. So how do you advise people on ensuring those donor relationships and continuing that involvement with donors?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I think especially in times like these right now, we've experienced a lot of organizations just early March when the COVID-19 crisis started rolling over all over Europe or across Europe. A lot of organizations thought that they should stop communicating with their donors immediately. Mm-hmm. And we quickly realized and also advised that that's the wrong approach. Use the time to communicate with your donors because they your need still exists within your organization. And if a donor is loyal to your cause, they want to know what is happening with the organization right now. Mm-hmm. So in times like these, communication is key. And I do believe that that applies to any time within your organization. You have to be transparent about your work. You also have to communicate on a regular basis because people that are interested in what you do want to hear from you. They don't want to have to wait on your communication and to hear from you.
Mm-hmm. And so how do these organizations kind of come back and see the results of your consulting and see the effects and report on the successes of the fundraising?
Mm-hmm. That's a very good question. Oftentimes we start working with organizations who are just setting up their fundraising initiatives mm-hmm. or that are implementing an activity. Our work is not always, you can't always see the results immediately. So until you can, oftentimes it takes 12 to 18 months for results. And it's so my role is oftentimes to encourage mm-hmm. staff there to be patient, to stick with the strategy, be developed together, and then to come back and evaluate whether it actually, you know, we've met our goals. And so oftentimes the goals we set can't really be related to income and money right away, but do the processes work? Have we become more efficient? Do we have less complaints than in the past? And has the fundraising income actually increased? But it won't be exponentially within the first couple months. So I think my role most of the time is encouraging staff to stick with it and to continue to put their effort forward so they will actually see the results and the fruits of their labor. And most of the time, and what I would advise and what I advise a lot of my clients is pick up the phone and talk to your donors and ask them if they what experiences they have made with your organizations and if they have actually seen what you're doing, and talk to them. Don't ever stop talking to your donor.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's a big thing that I've kind of gotten from you speaking is the importance of communication with donors. Mm-hmm. So I think that's so cool. So moving forward then, especially as we move past, I guess, this pandemic or maybe adjusting to how things have changed because of it, how do you see that impacting your role and how you consult with others? And I guess just in general, in the future, where do you see yourself in this sector?
I will always stay where I am. Mm-hmm. I will stay true to the sector, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. I do also truly, truly enjoy my line of work because you get to meet so many committed people. They have an idea and they want to make a positive impact. They are trying to solve a puzzle or solve a problem in this world. And so I'm very fortunate to be in this role, to have play a little role in this.
Yeah.
And so I don't think much will change, except we will have to become and that actually applies to a lot of organizations here. We have to not be afraid of the digital world and use it to our advantage. And a lot of organizations haven't been able to do that in the past, and they were forced into it. So we can't just look at it as a separate tool, but we have to fully integrate it into the organization, whether it's in fundraising, whether it is in our nonprofit and in the management of the organization. Mm-hmm. It's just part of it. It's a transformation that will never stop. And I think that's a key takeaway from what has happened the past couple months. And I actually do believe it's an opportunity for us, because it got us much faster to where we should have been a long time ago.
For sure. Yeah, that's awesome. And so I know you said you plan on staying in the sector and working in this area. So for the youth, the college students like myself who maybe be interested in entering your world, how would you say they should prepare? What kind of maybe classes they should take or experiences and skills they should have as they enter?
I love that question, because I would want for many, many more students to join the sector. So I think it's an excellent question. I really appreciate it. I do think you need a mixture of somewhat analytical skills, but also be able to communicate. And if I was in the role of hiring new talents for my organization, and oftentimes I actually advise on that part too, I would hire someone who is not afraid of math and not afraid of numbers. At the same time, someone who is empathetic and solution oriented.
Yeah.
You have to be a quick learner and to be able to adjust to new, to ever changing situations, because you do not know who you're going to face or who you're going to talk to in your nonprofit organization. And you need to understand the person across from you or the potential donor who is talking to you, so you can adjust your communication and cater, to match the need, their need with the organization's need. And so it all depends on what field you're looking into within the organization. But when it comes to fundraising, I think you need someone who is a quick learner and always solution oriented and definitely committed to what it is that the organization is doing and the mission.
Awesome. And then I guess out of my own curiosity, you had mentioned not being afraid of numbers. How much does math and numbers play a role in that in this situation?
Maybe I shouldn't have said math, but business administration. But I sure hope that everyone can add up 1 + 1.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, but you should be able to read business statements. You should be able to read annual reports, especially when you come in touch with major donors and you are working in or you're approaching foundations or any other type of donor, and you're you're trying to sell your program. You have to be able to put two and two together in that case.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, and you have to be able to explain where the organization is coming from and what your goals are. So you have to have somewhat of a business acumen. And I think that's very important in combination with the other skills.
And so let's say there's a scenario in which you have someone who might not have those kind of educational background, but they have that drive and that passion. Do you think that in your field, these kind of people are very teachable, and you're willing to bring them into your world, and because of their passion, because of how much they want to help out, that they're a valuable asset to you?
Absolutely. I do think if people are willing to be part of this, and they're willing to learn and adapt, and they're quick learners, and also they're really driven, I would always give him a chance. And, you know, if, in Germany, we have a different school system than you have in the US. So not everyone goes to college. We also have apprenticeships, which starts right after the age of usually 15 or 16 years old. So it's, I would always, always consider hiring someone too, who brings the skills and who is eager to learn. And then you can always make the decision to see if the person is the right fit for your organization.
Yeah. And on the other hand, then, let's say we have someone who is skeptical of the nonprofit sector, maybe does not see its value as much as maybe you do. What would you say to maybe convince them and show them the benefits of working in your field?
Mm-hmm. You know, I like to compare my world to eating chocolate, because when you eat chocolate, it makes you feel so good. You're happy, you get excited. And I think if you portray that that feeling into the nonprofit sector, that might actually help. But you can also, if you take it back to a more professional level, of course, if you have the opportunity to better the world, and if you have the opportunity to figure out ways and solutions to be part of it, how can you say no? Because it's not only for us, it's for all the future generations. And if we can just have a little, play a little role in and have a little part of it, I think it's the best work in the world. And if you can participate, give it a try, because I think your skill sets might actually help an organization that is really looking for, you know, picking up and taking the organization to a next level.
For sure. All right, Miriam. Well, is there anything else I haven't touched on that you'd like to speak about?
Well, I hope I could convince you to join our world.
Yeah.
And your fellow classmates. If not, I'm sure I can come up with more arguments because we need more talent.
Yeah, Miriam, I was going to ask you about that before we let you go. What does the talent challenges look like? I mean, you certainly know and understand, and you've heard me talk about the challenge predicaments that we seem to run into here in the U.S. And I am very familiar with sort of how the talent predicament plays out in the United Kingdom and Canada, for example, but is it pretty much the same in Germany, or is it different?
No, I think it's very similar over here. We're also trying to, you know, get people from other sectors to come over and work with us. Salary is usually, it could be one factor, adequate pay, I would say. I do think a lot of people haven't even considered working in the nonprofit sector. I think some people just don't know that it exists and that you can actually work in it and apply your expertise. So I think it's partially on us to advertise and to make sure that people are familiar with what's actually going on in the nonprofit world.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And you figured it all out in Nashville. So I don't know that I had pieced together. I appreciated hearing some of that history. And it has been Miriam, it has been a pleasure to host you. Reza, I think you did a wonderful job. We're going to broadcast this for the benefit of our listeners. And Miriam, you're always welcome back. I think you're one of our regular listeners, so thank you for being a part of this. You're always welcome back anytime you got a big idea or bold opinion about the fundraising profession.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much too. And if there's any questions from anyone listening to you, and I'm more than welcome to answer questions as much as I can. And so you're more than welcome to share my email address with folks who are interested in learning more about fundraising in Germany.
Yeah, if they want to get to the like your company website, can you tell us what that is? And we'll make sure to put those links in the show notes.
Yeah, you can put it in the show notes because I will pronounce it in German and see if people can find me. The link to my company is agentur-zielgenau.de, which is agentur-zielgenau.de.
Yes, so I will put that What does that mean?
It means, well, Agentur stands for agency, and Siegenau means targeted.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yes, we get that. Totally get that.
And, you know, it fits to our industry. But if yes. I may just say, I just want to wish you, Risa, all the best and good luck for your future. And I hope it, you enjoy the interviews and will truly consider working in our industry.
Yeah, thank you so much, Miriam. It's been awesome speaking and getting to know about you and the work that you do. So thank you again.
You're welcome.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.